Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, representing 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for workplace best practices for the media, lawmakers, and Florida's human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
A proposed solar power amendment sparks impassioned arguments before the Florida Supreme Court.
Why do you need that kind of right in the Constitution? I mean, I would assume that there are people who own and or lease solar things right now.
Also tonight, medical marijuana legislation is on its way to the governor, but some lawmakers don't think it goes far enough.
Senator Bradley, you know, I speak bull, and that sounds like a pow.
We'll also find out what happened today when lawmakers debated rules for police body cameras and what happens when life insurance money goes uncollected because the insurers can't find the beneficiaries. I'm Tom Flanagan. We begin the final week of the 2016 Florida legislative session, and this is Capitol Report. Attorneys for monopoly utility companies were in the Florida Supreme Court today arguing their proposed constitutional amendment. Consumers for Smart Solar does what it claims to do, which is promote solar power. But as Jim Ash found, attorneys for a competing amendment argued there's a hidden agenda.
The utility-backed measure says it gives consumers the right to, quote, own or lease solar equipment installed on their property to generate electricity for their own use. But backers of the competing amendment, Floridians for Solar Choice, say the utility measure is just a smokescreen to confuse voters. Why else, they say, would it be called Consumers for Smart Solar? And some of the justices appeared to wonder the same thing. Here's how Justice Barbara Perrienti began questioning the utility amendment attorneys.
There's argument that it's just neutral, that it's maintaining what exists now. And then there's argument that it actually, by prohibiting certain leases, that it may actually decrease even what is existing.
Justice Peggy Quince was even more direct.
Why do you need that kind of right in the Constitution? I mean, I would assume that there are people who own and or lease solar things right now.
Raul Cantero, an attorney for Consumers for Smart Solar, suggested the amendment would protect consumers if the legislature ever decided to ban solar equipment.
It's certainly the possibility that it can be outlawed at a time after somebody spends the capital to improve their home or their house with solar equipment and suddenly they can't use it.
Monday's hearing was not supposed to be about the merits of the amendment. Justices are only supposed to decide whether the ballot title and summary are misleading and whether they cover more than one subject. But when opponents are arguing the very existence of the utility amendment is a sham, avoiding the substance of the amendment becomes impossible. Bob Neighbors, an attorney for the environmentalists, argued the utility amendment is misleading because it promises voters something they already have.
We have currently in the Florida Constitution the right, in the Declaration of Rights, the right to own property. There are statutes that deal with solar energy. There are rules that deal with the right to possess and use solar energy.
After the hearing, attorneys for both sides continued to make their case for reporters on the court steps. The utility amendment also protects non-solar customers from having to, quote, subsidize the cost of backup power. David Guest, an attorney for Earth Justice, told reporters that the language would jeopardize net metering, which allows solar homeowners to sell power back to utilities.
It's a direction to the legislature to end net metering and to put the air brakes on solar power in Florida.
Backers of the utility amendment deny it. Matthew Carter, a Consumer for Smart Solar proponent and a former public service commissioner, said the amendment is not an attempt to confuse the voters.
I don't think it's confusing at all. I think common sense would dictate that.
It's not clear when justices will rule, but Consumers for Smart Solar has already won the first battle. Backers have more than enough signatures for the November ballot. And Floridians for Solar Choice, the environmental group, missed a February deadline. Its backers are now shooting for 2018. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
The Florida Senate is sending a medical marijuana proposal to the governor. Nick Evans reports the reform package grants access to terminal patients and carries a number of changes for the existing regulatory system.
The Senate had a fight Friday.
And I am going to respectfully ask that you vote against every single amendment today, including this one. I consider each of them to be unfriendly.
That's Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley, and it's a fight leadership was attempting to avoid. Senate President Andy Gardner sent Bradley's medical marijuana legislation back to committee after it got loaded down with amendments on the floor. But that stopped it little to unruffle feathers or settle disagreements.
Again, we talk about the argument that this bill has been agreed to by the House. This is a familiar refrain that we're seeing over the past few days, but it's most familiar to me because it's the same refrain that we had 2 years ago. When we created this system that hasn't helped anybody for 2 years.
That's Lake Worth Democratic Senator Jeff Clements. And that refrain he's talking about has come up in recent weeks, perhaps most notably on a death penalty compromise some senators really didn't think they needed to go along with. Clements and others have pushed for more growers and greater access for patients, but their lobbying largely fell on deaf ears in the Senate. Friday, they made their policy pitches again. And it wasn't just Democrats offering changes.
Every day we have 22 veterans that commit suicide. And you're telling me, Florida, being one of the most friendly states to our veterans, that we would not pass an amendment that would allow our veterans to have medical marijuana?
That's Baker Republican Senator Greg Evers. Friday on the floor, senators spent hours working through amendments, and Bradley fended off each attempt. But the ferment and discontent was just as present Monday.
Senator Bradley, you know, I speak bull, and that sounds like a pile because, I mean, you know.
That's Evers again, and he's upset with how the measure doles out additional licenses to grow marijuana. Under Bradley's provisions, three new licenses would become available once the state has a 250,000 patients. At least one of those additional licenses would be set aside for African-American farmers engaged in a class action lawsuit about discriminatory lending practices. But Orlando Democrat Geraldine Thompson says the threshold is still too high.
Of the states that allow for the use of medicinal marijuana, none of them have 250,000 patients.
This isn't quite right. It's true that only about 100,000 California patients are on the state's registry, but a marijuana policy project estimate puts the population of medical users at about 750,000. That's because joining the state registry is voluntary. Meanwhile, Jacksonville Democrat Audrey Gibson criticizes the bill for leaving out the poor.
So if we have no estimate of cost and it's not covered by insurance, Medicaid recipients nor Medicare recipients could pay for it, how can we determine that we're going to reach the 250,000-person threshold?
Monday, Bradley gained passage for his bill. It's now on its way to the governor. But it may be a short honeymoon. Even Bradley acknowledges a more extensive ballot initiative coming up in November could send lawmakers back to the drawing board. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Today, Governor Rick Scott signed into law a measure aimed at fixing a flaw in the state's death penalty sentencing system, struck down last month by the U.S. Supreme Court as unconstitutional. State lawmakers last week signed off on a measure that would require at least 10 jurors to recommend death for the penalty to be imposed. That's a compromise between the House and the Senate, which had originally favored unanimous jury recommendations. Prosecutors, including Attorney General Pam Bondi, pushed for the 10-2 recommendation, arguing that unanimity would allow a single juror to hijack the process. Of the 31 states with the death penalty, Florida is one of only three that do not require unanimous jury recommendations for death to be imposed. Bill sponsors say even with the compromise, the new law means the death penalty is still viable in the state. The legislation was prompted by a January 12th U.S. Supreme Court ruling in a case known as Hearst v. Florida that struck down the state's death penalty sentencing system as unconstitutional. That decision, which effectively put the death penalty on hold in Florida, came on the opening day of the legislative session, sending lawmakers scurrying to craft a remedy before the session ends this Friday. Still to come on Capitol Report, after its second go-around in the legislature, a body cameras-related bill is now headed to the governor.
I thank Senator Smith and the members of the House for working on this bill. This is a bill that's going to help us in the future protect both law enforcement officers and citizens.
Lawmakers say some life insurance companies aren't seeking beneficiaries because they'd rather collect interest from the premium payments.
I would describe the right thing as an insurance company paying the beneficiary what they're owed when a loved one dies. But unfortunately, that's not what's happening all the time.
And we'll visit the chambers of the Florida Senate as lawmakers bid hail and farewell to their outgoing president, Andy Gardner.
I cannot thank you enough. It has been truly a humbling experience, and it's time to go home. Thank you.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
A bill putting guidelines in place for law enforcement agencies that choose to use body cameras is now heading to the governor. Sasha Cordner reports the passing vote in the Florida legislature was unanimous.
Last week, the Florida House passed West Park Democratic Representative Chevron Jones' bill.
This bill requires law enforcement agencies to provide policies and procedures, as well as training to all personnel who use, maintain, store, or release body camera recording data. Members, this is the same bill that we voted unanimously out of the House last year.
Last year, Jones' bill died amid a budget impasse between the House and Senate. In this session, Jones, along with Tallahassee Democratic Representative Alan Williams, sponsored the measure again. The original bill had mandated the body cameras, but to get law enforcement on board, it now sets rules in place for the voluntary camera usage. Williams says despite some people's misgivings on the issue, there are areas of the state that use the cameras, including within his district.
In Havana, Florida, they already use the body cameras. And for them, I said, why do you use it? They said, we want to make sure that we are doing everything we can to protect those who we have decided to take the oath to serve and protect. We want transparency. We want to make sure that they're doing the right thing. We not only are we going to use it as a training tool, we're going to use it as a transparency tool and as an accountability tool. And so when I learned of that, I jumped right in. I said, I'm going to file this bill. And when I learned that Representative Jones had also filed a bill, I said, well, look, we don't need to have competing bills here. Let's team up. Let's work together.
Deerfield Beach Democratic Representative Gwendolyn Clark Reed says while she, too, likes the bill, she hopes the effort can go further.
Thank you, Representative Jones, for this good bill. And I'm just hoping that we can move this on from not only police officers to all of our first responders in another bill to protect everyone's rights.
Meanwhile, the Senate Monday unanimously passed a bill sponsored in that chamber by Fort Lauderdale Democratic Senator Chris Smith.
What we've seen in society lately is the advent of body cameras that have taken a lot of the speculation out of law enforcement and law enforcement incidents. Representative Chevron Jones and I have worked on this issue for 2 years and making sure that as we integrate more body cameras into our police departments, that we also have adequate rules and regulations concerning the use of those body cameras in an attempt to get more of our agencies, more of our police wearing body cameras so we can get rid of a lot of the speculation when it comes to law enforcement incidents.
Miami Gardens Democratic Senator Oscar Brainin says the legislation promotes transparency.
Something that will help exonerate both parties. It's not about whether one side is right or the other. It's about the truth, and that's what this bill is about. It's about getting to the truth and what actually happened. And I think everyone involved and all parties involved believe this is the step in the right direction.
Orlando Democratic Senator Darren Soto says the measure is particularly important for his district.
We've seen around this country an unfortunate trend of young minority men, both Hispanic, African-American, and others, be killed in issues and in scenarios where we didn't know what happened. And it could have been that our law enforcement officers were in the right, or there could have been civil rights violated. And so I know it's very important to our sheriff back home, Sheriff Demings in Orange County, to make sure that both the officers and our young men and women who are the subject of potential arrests are all kept safe.
And with the House and Senate's unanimous passage, it now gets sent to the governor's desk. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
In a priority of the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity, the House today unanimously approved a bill that seeks to crack down on fraud in the unemployment compensation system. The bill, sponsored by Republican of St. Cloud, Representative Mike LaRosa, now goes to the Senate, where a similar measure has been approved by two committees. Supporters of the House bill point to problems with criminals submitting fraudulent unemployment applications that use information obtained through identity theft. The bill, in part, would toughen penalties for people who defraud the unemployment system. Also, it would give the Department of Economic Opportunity access to driver's license images maintained by the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles to help validate unemployment claims and prevent fraud. Florida officials estimate life insurance companies owe the state's citizens more than $150 million. Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers in the House approved a bill today they say will help to right that.
Spring Hill Republican Representative Blazin Golia says the problem is simple.
If I have an insurance policy and I name my spouse as the beneficiary and I pass away, and my spouse has no idea that there's actually a policy that can help with the funeral arrangements. In the absence of this legislation, my spouse would never know. And unfortunately, that's happening to hundreds, if not thousands, of people in the state of Florida.
Chief Financial Officer Jeff Atwater says his office has been working with insurance companies to get unclaimed policies turned over to beneficiaries. So far, lawmakers say about two dozen companies have returned about $458 million. But Hollywood Democratic Representative Evan Jenny says not all companies are willing to, in his words, do the right thing.
And in this case, I would describe the right thing as an insurance company paying the beneficiary what they're owed when a loved one dies. But unfortunately, that's not what's happening all the time. Some, not all, have decided to take the low road.
Jenny says insurance companies are incentivized not to contact family members after a loved one dies. He says by keeping that money, the companies can continue collecting interest on it.
Right now, the CFO estimates that $150 million in payments that should be paid out to beneficiaries that are not being paid out. A quick check means that over 20 years at a simple 3.25% interest rate will mean $97 million in unearned cash for these companies. $97 million that isn't theirs to earn. $97 million made by willfully not parting with money that belongs to someone else. And literally thwarting the will of the dead.
Jenny says he wants to change that. He's one of many co-sponsors on a bill with primary sponsor Boca Raton Republican Representative Bill Hager. Hager says his measure would require insurance companies to seek out beneficiaries after a policyholder dies. If the beneficiary can't be found, the company would be required to turn the policy over to the state's unclaimed property office. The measure would also be retroactive, asking companies to look back in their files and find the beneficiaries of policies from people who died as many as 25 years ago. That retroactive aspect has some, like Gulf Breeze Republican Representative Doug Broxson, concerned.
We have instructed the companies now that they have to go back 25 years and find those folks that should have been paid and have not been paid. They've broken no laws, the life insurance companies. We've not done anything to tell them that they've done anything wrong. They've followed public policy. And now they have to go back because we're telling them to go back. What's happened? What's the new dynamic? Why didn't we know this 50 years ago?
Broxson says companies aren't paying because they don't know about the deaths and no claims have been filed. He says what's changed is that now technology is available to better track those policies. Some have raised concerns the companies could file a lawsuit due to the measure's retroactivity. But lawmakers like Winter Haven Republican Representative John Wood say they're not concerned.
If a company decides that it wants to litigate over retroactivity and deny the citizens of Florida their contractual rights, they have that opportunity. And they have the opportunity to put that in the public domain with their litigation. And I'm sure that the citizens of Florida will be paying close attention.
The measure passed to the House Monday unanimously. It now heads back to the Senate for final approval. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
After years of debate about the issue, the House set the stage today to pass a bill that would revamp the state's alimony laws. The Senate approved the measure last week, and the House could vote as soon as tomorrow. During today's House discussions, members rejected two amendments that would have changed wording in state laws to reflect the landmark U.S. Supreme Court ruling last year that said same-sex couples have a fundamental right to marry. The alimony bill, sponsored in the House by Representative Colleen Burton, Republican of Lakeland, would establish formulas for alimony payments and includes a controversial provision about how much time children should spend with their divorced parents. The bill would direct that judges start with a premise that children should spend approximately equal amounts of time with each parent. You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, one of Florida's oldest legislative traditions takes place during the last week of session. Members leaving the legislature give their farewell speeches and are honored by their colleagues, and the highest honors are reserved for the legislative leadership. The Florida Senate is saying goodbye to its president, Andy Gardner. Lynn Hatter reports the Central Florida lawmaker is term limited out of the legislature this year and also at the end of his time leading the chamber.
The Florida Senate currently has three past presidents in its chamber, Republicans Don Gates, Tom Lee, and Democrat Gwen Margolis. Now it's saying goodbye to its current Senate President, Andy Gardner. Gardner of Orlando has worked his way up into that leadership position. His career began in 2000 when he was elected to the Florida House. In 2008, he was elected to the state Senate. He's served as majority leader in both chambers. Many of his Senate colleagues also worked with Gardner in the House, where, as Republican Senator Thad Altman recalls, Gardner led the House's Wednesday morning prayer sessions.
And he selected that we would do the series of tapes following the book, A Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. Now, that's a big deal. Rick Warren, you know, he was the evangelical that hosted the public forum on the presidency with Barack Obama and John McCain, the first time they met in public. And get this, he did it for the purpose of restoring civility in our civil discourse. So we did the series of tapes, and we had our last meeting, and lo and behold, I go to the last meeting, and who's there leading the group? Rick Warren himself. And I realized then, this Andy Gardner is a remarkable guy. When he does something, he does it right.
Throughout his time in office, Gardner has championed bills for people with disabilities. His son has Down syndrome. But as Republican Senator Anatari Flores recalled, during Gardner's last year in the House, a bill he championed failed.
It was a tough decision for Andy at the time because he said, you know, I know that I could block this, but we have to do the right thing for the people that we can help at the time. And so we've had opportunities since then to come back, but that was a really, really difficult decision. And I think it was an incredible testament to your leadership to say, I'm going to put myself aside to do what's right for other people.
Democratic Senator Arthenia Joyner notes Gardner has never been afraid to cross the political aisle. And he did so, along with former Tallahassee Representative Loran Osley.
So every time I looked, she was out running, as has been said, and you were out running. And on the floor of the House, you all, the two of you, coalesced and made a significant difference. She had a child who was born with unique abilities, and you consoled her. And you had a child born with unique abilities. And the two of you together have made history in this state.
But for Gardner and other lawmakers before him, the time has finally come. When the Florida legislature adjourns later this week, Gardner will go home permanently. And he says he's ready, but not without some final advice for his colleagues.
You're going to cry. You're going to laugh. You're going to yell. You will feel every emotion that you can possibly think of. But I will tell you this, enjoy every minute of it. Surround yourself with people that you enjoy being around, because you will be around them a lot. I can assure you of that. But on behalf of the Gardner family, and to everybody that has been here and been a part of my political career, which is coming to an end, thank you. And thank you to the press. Thank you for everything. And thank you for embracing the Gardner family on this journey. I cannot thank you enough. It has been truly a humbling experience. And it's time to go home.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, representing 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for workplace best practices for the media, lawmakers, and Florida's human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.